Many of us plant herbs around our home, but there are herbs that can be grown simply and easily using time-tested and organic methods that can be some of the most healing medicinal plants on the planet. They can be grown and transformed into medicinal concoctions that have therapeutic benefits that go far beyond the culinary uses of herbs that we tend to think about. My guest today is Juliet Blankenspohr. She is the founder of Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine and the author of what could be a beautiful coffee table book for you or anyone else who loves the idea of how can we cultivate and handcraft herbal remedies that can help us to heal right in our backyard. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark.
Juliet Blankenspohr is the founder of Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine, an online school serving thousands of students from around the globe. And she is also the author of The Healing Garden, Cultivating and Handcrafting Herbal Remedies. This is a detailed herbal reference, a decadent cookbook, and a garden manual all in one, and it really is beautiful. The Healing Garden is an essential guide to designing the herb garden of your dreams and growing 30 of the most healing medicinal plants on the planet with time-tested organic methods. It's written for home gardeners and anyone looking to bring therapeutic benefits of healing herbs into their garden, kitchen, and apothecary. Plus, it comes with a set of extraordinary bonuses that you can learn more about in the Healing Garden Gateway. Juliet is a bona fide plant geek with a degree in botany and over 30 years of experience in teaching and writing about herbalism, medicine making, and organic herb gardening. Juliet and her family reside in a home overrun with houseplants and books in Asheville, North Carolina. Juliet Blankenspohr, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in and sharing what I think is one of the most devastating lost arts in science and medicine, and that is the use of and the intensive study of herbal medicines and just how healing varieties of plant species can be. I mean, we've almost lost it from all pharmacy education, which every pharmacy school in the country used to require pharmacognosy, where you researched plants. And now, beyond hearing about maybe some echinacea there, some foxglove here, you really don't get any exposure to herbs and how, when we are able to grow our own herbs, our own foods, that they can be powerful remedies to have around the house. And so talk to us a little bit about, you know, we've never talked herbalism on the show. So just give us a kind of a 101 in what herbalism is and how we can get started with just some really basics on incorporating different herbs into our lives.
Okay, great. Well, I first want to just back up and say that even though in like Western industrialized nations, the like use of herbs declined along with the modernization of medicine, industrialization, all that, that so many people around the world never stopped using plants. So indigenous peoples and so many people living close to the earth have just continued to use herbal medicine. So the resurgence is really amongst like mostly like wealthy populations or just, you know, countries with more economic resources than white folks, but people of color, especially indigenous folks, but they've been using plants all along. So I think that's really important to remember. But for those of us who didn't grow up with plant medicine, and myself included, I think that there's three easy ways to really incorporate plant medicine into our daily lives. And the first is to make simple teas. And in herbal medicine, we say a simple is just a remedy that's one plant, right? So a lot of times when you go and you buy a tea bag in the store, let's say you buy like a capsule blend or a tincture blend, it's multiple botanicals in one. So just taking one herb at a time and taking the time when you're drinking the tea or however you're ingesting it to really like close your eyes and feel how it feels in your body, to smell it, to taste it, and really like connect with that plant. And I think that's also if you're like newer to herbal medicine, wanting to learn more about the specific medicinal actions of a plant, that is a really great way to sort of get studious in a very like tangible way. The second I would say is just growing and harvesting medicinal plants. And so, you know, you don't have to have a garden to do that. You can grow aloe vera as a container plant, or prickly pear, or gotocola. Those are lovely house plants. Or let's say you have a balcony, you can grow sage or rosemary, which are culinary and medicinal herbs. Also, thinking about, well, a lot of us, when we think of herbal medicine, we think of teas or capsules or tinctures, or maybe we've seen salves or ointments or use them ourselves. But the herbs, a lot of them can be used as food medicine. And so if you've ever made like, let's say a big pot of marinara and you threw in big handfuls of sage or rosemary or thyme, you're really making herbal medicine that you're then ingesting as food, because those herbs not only taste yummy, but they're wonderful antioxidants and some of the best preventative medicine that we can ingest. So, you know, herbal medicine in its simplest form is plant medicine, and all animals, including humans, use plant medicine. You know, whether they're aware of it or not, that's part of our lineage, everyone's ancestral lineage, you know, just as you alluded to with like the early pharmacists knowing a lot about plant medicine, that all, you know, that that's been our primary form of medicine as humans since before we even became humans.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have used all kinds of plant-based ingredients, and we're drawn to not only the healing properties that herbs can have, but, you know, we talked with the author of Drunk, Dr. Slingerland, about how humans are also drawn to the expansive quality that plants can have, the psychedelic effects. But to your point, there's still something intoxicating about ripping open fresh basil and like experiencing that. And so it does engage our senses. And I loved what you said is, yes, you can make the tea, but take the time to actually smell it and taste it along the way, because we don't savor our food anymore.
So. Yeah, I think that's medicine in of itself. It's just like connecting to the moment, to our bodies, to our breath, and to the medicine, the plant medicine.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I also love, you know, you mentioned a few indoor plants. The other thing that's great about having plants in your home is that it helps to purify your air as well. So you're getting so much on so many different levels. And so I'd love to go deeper into some of the plants that you love to grow. I mean, we've talked a little bit of basil and rosemary, but what are some that maybe the average person wouldn't think necessarily to put in their garden, but that is just a super useful healing plant.
Okay, great. Well, I think I'll start with some of the herbs that people may already have growing in their garden, and they might not know that they are medicinal. And so one of the first to talk about is bee balm, which goes by so many names, bee balm, Oswego tea, wild bergamot. All of these plants are in the Monarda genus, and it's a genus of plants, a group of plants that are native only to North America. And these are very important medicine and culinary herbs to indigenous peoples all across North America, because there's, you know, these bee balms that are good for growing in arid climates. Like if some of your listeners live in, like, let's say a desert climate, or they live in an area with really drier soil, they can grow Monarda, wild bergamot, Monarda fistulosa. Or if you live in a more temperate northern climate, you can grow Monarda didyma or bee balm. The bee balms are wonderful to grow because they attract pollinators like nobody's business. You know, so many butterflies and bees, hence the name bee balm. But also these magical insects called the hummingbird moths, which just look like these amazing fairies. And bee balm is a wonderful, gentle nervine. And that's, so it's an herb that supports our nervous system. So it's one that we can use for stress or anxiety, insomnia, but it's not, overly sedating. It's a very gentle nervous system remedy. It also is a carminative, which is, it helps with intestinal gas. So it's something that we can add to our food to help digestion, but also if we're experiencing indigestion after eating. Safe for kids, doesn't have a lot of precautions along with pharmaceuticals for folks that are taking medications. It's generally safe. And it's a good point here is that bee balm is a herb that we can consume as a food. And any herb that we can consume as a food, we're going to know it's got a higher safety profile, right? Like an herb like basil or rosemary or sage, which are familiar culinary herbs, they're also medicinal. But we know that in general, they're going to be safer than a lot of our other remedies. So that's one. Echinacea, a lot of people I'm sure already grow, and you can use the flowers and roots as an immune stimulant, and anti-inflammatory. Yarrow is another herb that a lot of people grow in their garden, and it's one of the best herbs for stopping bleeding. It's a great herb to have on hand for first aid remedy. And then lavender is another really easy to grow medicinal that's so beautiful and attracts so many pollinators. And there are so many varieties now of lavender that are more cold hardy. So if you go to your local nursery, if you live in a colder climate, you can find one that will overwinter for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the thing, so I love echinacea because the flowers are so beautiful. Same with lavender. And lavender is just so versatile. You can just do so much with it. And yarrow is one of my favorite smells. It is absolutely one of my absolute favorite smells. And the leaves are just so soft and so gentle. And so when you said it's great to stop bleeding, I'm just imagining, I mean, what would you do? Would you grab the yarrow, put it under a poultice, or like what would be your approach?
Yeah, so poultice would definitely be a way that I use it a lot. There's several ways to use it. So, this might be a little too crude for some of your listeners, but we call this the chew and spit poultice. And this is like a famous backcountry remedy and super simple. And that's where you just pick the herb, you chew it yourself. You're not going to have someone else do it, but you chew it and you just masticate it. You get all the juices flowing and you put it right on. And I have seen, because I used to take my students out camping like 4 weeks a year. So we ran into a lot of first aid scenarios, and It's amazing how Yara will stop bleeding like that. And especially I've seen it like in a head wound where, you know, that's someone was just like bleeding profusely from their scalp, and just put Yara right on there and stop the bleeding immediately. So
do you know what the procoagulant is in it? Like what's cauterizing? It's not cauterizing, yeah. But what's stopping it?
I don't know what the active constituent is or if there's just one. And that's kind of the beauty of herbs, is that each one of them will contain like thousands of constituents. And so it's often a synergy of compounds. Sometimes we can just like isolate this. Okay, it's this compound that's causing this action, but it's often far more complex. But Yarrow also, people will just take the leaves and powder them and then blend them. So they dry the leaves and powder them and just keep that in a first aid kit with them so that they can just put the powder right onto a wound to stop bleeding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that seems like it would add a layer of convenience, which
yes.
in a situation of first aid, speed is important. So you've mentioned making teas. Now we've mentioned drying things. So are we drying things in just a dehydrator, or do you just allow the plants to dry out naturally? You know, talk to us about like, what is your methodology for taking, you know, lavender from its plant form into the many different ways that you might use it?
Mm-hmm. So it really depends on what climate you live in and how you can dry herbs. So for those of you who live in an arid climate, I mean, it's just a cinch to dry herbs. It's, you're harvesting it, and you can either, depending on the material, let's say if it's leaves or individual flowers like calendula flowers, then you can dry them in a basket in an area that gets good ventilation. You can put things in a dehydrator, but you don't need one. And if you live in a humid climate like I do, in the Southern Appalachians, it's very humid here. What I do is I turn a room in my house in the summer into a dehydrating room, and I put a dehumidifier running and a fan going nonstop, overhead fan and another fan, and herbs will dry in like 2 days. So it's almost like the room is a dehydrator, and you just could like crunch up the plant material, make sure it's crunchy before you put it in a jar so that it's completely dry and it doesn't mold. But you can hang herbs, you can put herbs in a basket, you can put them on screens. I use an Amish clothes drying rack to hang herbs from, because you can just dry a ton of herbs in a small space hanging from that rack.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I honestly, like, I don't know about you, but I'm not opposed to the dehydrating machines. It's usually more useful for things like figs and fruits and things like that. But if somebody is living in a place where they can't turn an entire room into a dehydrator, certainly just using that hack, or just throw it into the oven. You know, you can easily dehydrate things that way too.
Yeah, you do have to be careful with the heat because it can degrade constituents.
Uh-huh.
So in that case, you know, I would rather use a dehydrator. But like, for instance, my room that I use as a drying room, that's not everything that's happening there. There's bookshelves, it's an office space that also has herbs drying in it. Just any space in your house, really, that has good airflow. You want to avoid direct sunlight because that can degrade constituents along with the heat. But just whatever works for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so talk to us more about, before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. I want to share with you a show that has made such a difference in so many women who are breastfeeding's lives. It's called the Milk Making Minutes, and it looks at the struggles and triumphs of what breastfeeding is, as well as the systemic barriers that women face when they are breastfeeding. I listened to a couple of shows because one of the things we talk about on our show is how important it is to be your own advocate. And I loved the show about when breastfeeding gets questioned and how we can be loud about what matters. And it's not just about the systemic struggles that people face. It's also really down to earth and practical advice about, like, are you using the right size flange on your breast pump? How do you deal with a tongue tie? And we also talk about the long-term benefits and the hope that breastfeeding can give new moms. I encourage you now to go and check out the show. It's called The Milk Making Minutes. And now, let's get back to the show. You know, kind of take us around your house. Where all are the herbs and how are they getting used?
Yeah, that's great. Wait, so then I have plants growing on my back deck in big planters. Bless you.
Thank you. The audience couldn't hear it. I muted it, but I just sneezed very, very, very loudly, friends. So,
on the deck, I have potted herbs. And so in the summer there, I grow, that's where my culinary herbs are because I can go right out from the kitchen to grab them when I'm cooking. So that's where I have garden sage and rosemary, lavender, anise, hyssop, calendula. And then in the warmer months, I grow lemongrass in pots and holy basil and also culinary basil. And then I have a garden in the front with raised garden beds. And then also I planted ornamental medicinal herbs along my walkway. So they're beautifying the front yard, but then I can also harvest them and use them for medicine. So that's what's happening outside. And then inside, I have an apothecary room, and that's where I keep my tinctures and oils and vinegars. And also we use it as an office space. And then I have medicinal plants, aloe vera and prickly pear, gota kola and jygulan. And then the medicinal herbs get incorporated into daily teas that I drink for my health and tinctures. And then I also make a lot of medicinal foods.
Okay. What about personal care products? Do you use it in like your personal care routine?
Yeah. So I make this floral facial serum that I love. I have that recipe in my book, The Healing Garden. So it's basically rose and lavender and elderflowers and calendula and steeped or infused into jojoba oil. And then I also add rosehip seed oil and different essential oils like geranium and helichrysum. And so I use that facial serum on my skin. And then also I make salves and then different like massage oils and bath salts. And one of my favorite body care is making homemade salt scrubs, which are like sugar scrubs and that they're like exfoliating and moisturizing because they have oil in them.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I love that as well because there's so many bad things in personal care products. And so when we're able to use something that's a little bit closer to the earth, it just makes us healthier in general. And so what are some of your favorite meals to cook with the healing herbs?
Well, I love herbal pestos. So, you know, all of us are familiar with basil and pesto, but you can make a lot of other kinds of herbal pesto. So in my book, I have several, I have sort of a base recipe for making your own fresh herbal pestos. So like, for instance, lemon balm, which a lot of people grow in their garden and we think of it as a tea, but you can actually make a delicious pesto out of lemon balm, or Tulsi or holy basil. You can combine that with Genovese basil and make a lovely pesto in that way. And so then you're bringing in all the antioxidant, anti-inflammatory qualities of the basil, plus all the wonderful medicine of fresh ginger, you know, which is such a wonderful remedy for the cardiovascular system and also an antioxidant, one of our best cancer preventative medicines around. So I love my herbal pestos. Hibiscus chutney is another fun one. I just did that recipe is in my book, but we just shared it on our Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine Instagram page, the recipe for that. And that's one that's, you know, that you can prepare for Thanksgiving in lieu of like cranberry sauce, or in addition to. So those are, yeah, just a few examples. Nettles pate is another one of my absolute favorites. And many of your listeners will know of stinging nettles from like brushing up against it in the woods or pasture or whatnot. But it's a wonderful wild food and herb, and you can make a delicious pate from it, which is just like a really kind of a, like a thick pesto almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you harvest them without getting just like in so much trouble?
Yes, with long sleeves and leather gloves, thick leather gloves. Yeah.
And so what do you then do? How do you like turn this into a food now so that it's not like irritating you the whole time?
Yeah. So the sting goes away when you dry the herb or when you cook it. So it's got, I don't know if you've ever seen the photos, it's got these little trigger hairs that literally inject a slew of inflammatory chemicals into your skin. And that whole armament gets disarmed when we cook or dry nettles. So with the stinging nettles, the plant's a little bit like chewy. It's like a little fibrous. Like, so you just take the tender tops in the early spring when you harvest them. And then when you steam them, they no longer sting your mouth and they're safe to eat. And then putting them in a food processor with oil and garlic and nuts or mushrooms. There's so many different things that you can add to it that just makes the plant material even more tender and palatable.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, you've mentioned pestos, but then when you said mushrooms, I don't think that enough people know how delicious duxelle is. And that is basically like a mushroom pate that you could add parsley into, you could add oregano, you could add thyme, you could take it like a very, you know, French direction or a more Mediterranean direction. And so duxelle is something that makes amazing dips and toppings. And if you've ever made a beef Wellington or a vegan Wellington, the duxelle is like a really important piece of it. And I love the flavor that you can get from it when you, you know.
I'm not familiar with that. What is it?
It's duxelle? Like
blended, yeah.
Yeah, so duxelle, it's D-U-X-E-L-L-E, and it's where you take mushrooms and basically grind them to a, you can do it at like a more chunky consistency, or you can go straight like pureed consistency. It's all raw, and you can throw in whatever kind of, like if you want garlic, if you want parsley or basil or oregano or sage, but it becomes this paste that when you make a traditional beef Wellington, you have your beef, but it's smeared with this duxelle before it gets wrapped up. But duxelle on its own is so delicious and can really add kind of a flavor bomb to soups and stews if you need something quickly that you can just reach in and grab it. It's a really earthy flavor, I mean, as mushrooms are. But yeah, when you said mixing in mushrooms into pesto, I was like, ooh, or just making like the mushroom pate that's so delicious. And you could add all kinds of whatever into it. You get to be creative. Talk to us a little bit about how gardening itself has an impact on our quality of life, our overall perception of our happiness, et cetera.
So, I mean, I think gardening is one of the best ways that we can reduce stress in our life. I mean, first, from getting away from screens, right? So that's just like, you can't be looking at your phone when you're gardening, but just for those of us too who live in like suburban or urban neighborhoods, it's a wonderful way to connect with your neighbors who are walking by and just like swapping plants with them. So just keeping our bodies active. And then it also keeps us in tune with the seasons and the elements and just the cycles of life, of death and rebirth. And I think that, you know, just as modern people, and especially in these times of just epic distraction, and it's just so simple. And that simple, that simplicity is nourishing on such a deep level, and it's medicine in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you care for your garden without the use of the heavy pesticides and herbicides? And what steps do you take to return your dirt back to soil, which is actually what we need to be growing our plants in?
Mm-hmm. So I'm an organic grower and have been since I started growing plants when I was 18. So I use any chemical fertilizers or herbicides, pesticides. And there are so many wonderful books now on organic gardening and like free YouTube channels. I mean, it's a great time to learn organic gardening. But so basically, from the number one thing you can do is grow plants that are suited to your area. Relax your expectations. And so that means like if leaves are tattered or eaten some, that's okay. And then to nourish your soil, because just like us, you know, like the healthiest environment that we have in terms of like our social environment, our home space, the food we're eating, the water we're drinking, the air we're breathing, plants are the same. So as nourishing the soil instead of like feeding the plants directly. And so we nourish the soil through organic matter. So that's adding a ton of compost or composted manure and mulch, which degrades and becomes organic matter. So I mulch heavily and just add as much brown goodness as I can to the soil. And then I do use store-bought organic fertilizers, which are so readily available now. So I use like liquid and also powder organic fertilizer, and it really helps the plants to thrive. And when they're healthy, then they need less pest and disease management than plants who are not as well nourished.
Very interesting. I never really thought about it, but of course it makes sense that the healthier the plant is, the more resistant to pests and predators it is. It reminds me, I have a third generation, totally naturally reared dog, and, you know, she doesn't use any heavy duty flea and tick, you know, just, and people are like, how on earth is she not covered in fleas? Because I'm in Alabama, and I'm just like, you can literally watch the fleas like jump off of her. You know, it's just, I don't know what it is, but the healthier you stay, the easier it is to ward off things that would threaten us. And I think that that's certainly true for humans. The healthier that we are, the less likely we are to be exposed to things in our immune system that sets us off in the wrong direction. And so I'm interested to know, what got you into herbalism in the first place?
Yeah, so I grew up in the suburbs, and my grandpa was a gardener, and my dad was also a gardener, and they tried to like rope me into gardening, and I was not interested, and I wasn't really, I loved being in the woods, just like the grown-up free environment of the woods. I liked that, you know, where you could just run free and just the solitude. And I think just, you know, kids are just drawn to, once they, you know, once you get them out in nature, they're like, they feel it in their bodies. Oh, this is a good feeling. But really, I was like a bookworm and into soccer, not really into herbal medicine. But I think the seed was planted for me when I was 13. I got a really bad case of mononucleosis. And then when I went to the doctor, he was like, oh, just, you know, you should just let it play out. You're just going to get better. There's nothing we can do. And I just remembered when I was a kid, I was like, surely there must be something to give ease or to quicken my, you know, improvement in health and restore health. So it was like just some kind of knowing. I think there were also a couple books I had read as a kid about plant medicine, and that sort of planted the seed of like, oh yeah, people used to use plants for medicine, even though I didn't know anyone who did. I was like, that is a thing. And it sure seems like it would be handy in this situation, but I guess I'll just go home and be sick. And but then when I went to college, I just like developed an awareness about the environmental crisis and became friends with people who were into plants. And I just like instantaneously caught the plant bug and just became consumed with it. And I think that there's just no, it was like a calling. And, you know, not everyone receives such a strong calling. I feel like so blessed. And it was just a complete infatuation. And at the time I was studying languages in school. I just, you know, just languages come easy for me to learn. And I was actually having a psychedelic experience, and I had this dragonfly came up to me. And, you know, I think that this is really like my subconscious speaking to me, but the dragonfly like looked me in the eye and was like, you need to study plants. And like the next day I went to school and I was like, I'm switching majors to botany. And I studied botany, and took every field botany class that I could, gardening class. And I didn't learn about plant medicine from my teachers because they weren't herbalists. They were just botanists, not just, but they, you know, they didn't apply their knowledge in that way. And then, yeah, I just found books and teachers, and this is all before the internet. So I just, any book I got my hand on, I would just devour and experiment, like, because I did know the plants. So I wasn't just like going out and harvesting random plants. But if I read in a book about bayberry, and then in school, I will be like, oh, I know bayberry. That's Myrica's sorifera. This is, I knew, you know, exactly how to identify it and where to find it. And I would just go and start harvesting plants on my own and experimenting with them and making teas for myself and my friends, and learned that way until I found like a bona fide herbal teacher.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing when you just connect to it, when you just like inherently understand it. And I think we all have those moments in our lives where we get into that like profound flow that is so, so special when you find it. I mean, it happens to me with singing and dancing, and, you know, that I was always a child that would sing and dance anywhere, and it maintained it into adulthood. And I think a ton of people understand what you're saying about being in nature being so comforting and honestly part of who we're designed to be as human beings. We're supposed to be out in nature. So, oh, listeners, please go and pick up a copy of The Healing Garden, Cultivating and Handcrafting Herbal Remedies by Juliet. You can also check out her Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine at chestnutherbs.com. And so, Juliet Blankenspohr, thank you so much for coming in and being a guest today on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Lindsay. It was great to chat and connect.
Amare has two new products that can help you to have healthier skin from the inside out and the outside in. First, there is the Dermabiotics Collagen Boosting Spray and the Dermabiotics Plant Regenerating Serum. These products in combination help to activate the natural production of collagen, protect the skin barrier, balance and nourish the surface of the skin's microbiome, reduce the appearance of fine lines, wrinkles, and redness, and support a firm, hydrated, glowy skin. The best part is they are clean, plant-based, and cruelty-free, and no animal ingredients or animal testing. All it is targeted prebiotics, probiotics, and phytobiotics that directly nourish the microbiome. The oral spray, the collagen-boosting spray, also contains targeted postbiotics, phytonutrients, and minerals, which naturally help your body to produce more collagen. They work synergistically together to improve skin moisture, density, and elasticity from the outside in while protecting and supporting collagen production from the inside out. Postbiotics help to support our gut-skin axis, and our skin is one of the primary barriers that we have to the outside world. You can head to lindsayelmore.com/amare right now to save $10 on your purchase of Dermabiotics. You can purchase only the serum, only the spray, or the pack that contains them both. That's lindsayelmore.com/amare to save $10 off of your first order. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.